This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is Peter Higgins, and I am your co-host of the Twin Peaks podcast with my brilliant co-host, Henry Viola Hare. And we're here on the 4th of August, and it's about 7:15, and we're going to be running through some very interesting stocks for you for the next hour or so. But first of all, let's find out how Henry has been. Henry, how are you doing, sir?
I'm very well, thank you, Peter. Very well indeed. I'm enjoying the good weather, which is a good thing, as it seems to be perennially sunshine at the moment, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I was just saying to you earlier, mate, we had about a 10-minute shower and we're like, ooh, it was like...
What's that?
Is that actually rain? We heard the noise, but almost didn't recognise the noise. It was mad. But that's Leicestershire for you. It's been a bit barren with regards to rain for nearly 2 months now. So yeah, so a nice shock for us. But I'm glad that you're well and you haven't been caught out in any showers of late. Right, folks, we're going to start this podcast with some of the feedback we've got or had of the many for the brilliant Wayne Grossman that was here, former market trader then. Yeah, market maker.
Market
yeah, that's
maker.
A sun getting to my brain. Yeah, market maker. Get my words out. 18 years experience of doing that and 38 years all told in the financial markets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Phenomenal sort of background. Shared some of his stories and some of his analysis. And I must admit, and I've done it today, actually, I trimmed again this week, and I've now exited Spire Holdings, Henry.
Oh, the healthcare business, yeah.
The healthcare business, that's got its put up and shut up on the 6th, which is... I think it's Thursday.
2 days away.
Thursday. Yeah. 2 days away. But today I've gone, now I'm out, I'm done. Not waiting for that last 3-7% of it, whatever's left. Because of some of the things that Wayne was saying in the pod regarding my investing and trading strategy regarding takeovers. And normally I trim and then wait for the rest of it. And sometimes it goes, actually, there's no takeover. And the share price just goes, wallop. So rather than waiting for that last 3, 4, 5, 7%, I've gone, I'm done.
Yeah,
waited to see if there's another bidder, nothing. So we'll see what happens. If the 250 comes out, bid, happy days for everybody else kept it. I've exited now at 230, so I'm pleased with that. But that was because of Wayne. So thank you, Wayne, to just reiterate to me what I was doing and I must keep doing. Right, so feedback from Matthew Gregory at Matthew Gregory with a single T. Matthew Gregory 5. Really great episode. Fascinating to hear Wayne talk about the trading and market maker side of the markets. Great stuff. Now, Henry's favorite Twitter handle on X is invest like a sloth.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And his words were simply, yup, it's a good one. And of course, we had Terry Vaughan on YouTube as well. Brilliant Terry, who comments on YouTube every single episode. We love you to bits, mate. Thank you for your support. A big thank you to the special guest, Wayne, and an interesting view of the commodities and an insight in futures and spot dealing and International Tin Council and the Big Bang. An interesting topic of market making and the principle of limits and a good discussion about profit warnings. Excellent teachings about FOMO and psychology, dangers of an AI bubble, and a great Warren Buffett quote. Please keep up the good work and take care, gentlemen. Three brilliant bits of feedback there from the many. Thoughts, Henry, from yourself as to that particular experience of sitting down with a high quality individual who's done the business regarding market making?
I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation with Wayne. He's a name that I've seen on LinkedIn for a while. I've not seen him interviewed elsewhere, so it was really fascinating to sit down and see See how his mind works, see where his career's taken him, see what he's learned. And he comes at markets from a very different perspective to you and I. And so it was quite interesting to have a conversation with him about how he's viewing things, because so often you'll talk to an investor and either, you've seen them elsewhere, you've read their work previously, and they've got, a similar sort of outlook. And so this was something that for me was really left field. And I've just really enjoyed the conversation.
Agreed. It was absolutely brilliant. I think the beauty of us speaking with him is that, and I'm gonna fingers crossed now, we're probably one of the first like independent type of podcasts in the UK to have interviewed him. So hopefully we've put his name out there now and other people will end up interviewing him going forward. And obviously his blog, Tales from the Trading Floor, will get a few other Substack subscribers going forward, hopefully that, from our listeners. So thank you again, Wayne, and we'll speak to you very, very soon, sir. Right, Henry, you came up with the idea of this particular pod's topic. Yeah.
Yes.
So would you care to introduce it, please, sir, and tell people why, what it's about, and then go into your first stock if you wish.
Absolutely. So, for those of you that haven't been following the headlines with a forensic analysis over the last couple of days, you might have missed the news that a very large fund in the US called Situational Awareness actually blew itself up on Wednesday. And Situational Awareness was run by a chap called Leopold Aschenbrenner, who was a German, I think. And Leopold basically had a thesis that was that AI companies were going to become more and more dominant in the economy. They were going to absorb more and more economic capital. And as they did so, they were also going to destroy software businesses. So Peter and I have talked before about the SaaS apocalypse, the software as a service apocalypse. And this was basically Leopold's theory. And he grew his fund from 200 million, I think it was, up to a couple of billion at peak, on the premise that he was going to go long on AI companies, i.e., bet that they were going to go up in value, and he was going to go short on the other side and bet that the software businesses were going to go down the tubes. And this worked brilliantly for a long time, as his assets under management showed. A large proportion of those returns were generated from profits in the market. And then all of a sudden, the market had an about turn, and what went up started to come back down. And the AI shares all began to fall off a cliff. Nvidia came down, CoreWeave came down, Nebius came down. And the software companies started to recover. And all of a sudden, Leopold got margin called. I think he got margin called on a Monday, so the press are saying. By the Wednesday, he was calling people up to ask for capital to repay the margin loans that he'd borrowed. By Wednesday evening, he'd had to sell the entire listed portfolio at a discount to Citadel Securities, the large US market maker. And so this got me thinking about the volatility associated with AI shares. I'm sure members of the audience are sick to death of hearing about AI. It's everywhere at the moment. Either you think it's going to revolutionize the world, or you think it's the biggest scam, or maybe you're not quite decided. But it got me thinking about really what a great alternative UK markets are to all the chaos associated with the AI revolution. And how many great businesses we've got that are performing really strongly year to date, that are actually nothing to do with AI whatsoever. And so I thought Peter and I could discuss those on this episode.
And we will do, Henry. I just got to share this part of the story to you because I'm sure that you got this bit here, and you mentioned the person's name earlier, right? So some people are saying this story regarding situational awareness is going to be the story of 2026. Okay, so you've got Ken Griffiths of
That's
Citadel,
the
the person's
fella.
name.
Yep.
That's the fellow you were looking for, was pushing for a surprise rate hike fears just days before the AI trade collapsed and forced four times levered, I won't try and pronounce his name, Leopold's Situational Awareness Fund to unload his book near lows. Citadel then reportedly bought most of the assets at significantly lower prices, knowing that if sentiment deteriorated enough, the fund could be forced to sell, which makes the entire sequence look absolutely ruthless. So you talk it up, rate hike fears, what happens? The risk of the pricing of AI stocks. Yeah?
Yeah.
They have to go down.
Well, the big risk with AI is just how much debt these businesses are borrowing.
Precisely.
Now, so they're levered up to the hilt. And so if interest rates go up, the debt follows
precisely.
It. And so a lot of them will fall over. Cash flow is already crippled at a lot of these companies. And that will get worse. And that's what tanked the shares.
And that's what Ken Griffiths was orchestrating, allegedly. I say allegedly because of our other listeners will go keep saying something that's not true. But that's what happens. So he's lost billions, got wiped out, and he's got it on the cheap. And what happens next month? Could it be possible that Citadel starts to push for a rate reduction?
Yep.
Share price starts to go up again. And since that's happened in the last couple of days, the US market has ebbed up just a little bit. All those AI stocks have had a little bit of a recovery, haven't they?
A lot of them are 30, 40, 50% off their all-time highs. You know, I mean, you look at the famous one that listed recently, SpaceX, is down,
later on.
You know, it was $200 a share. I think it's currently $130 maybe.
I think it's less than that, Henry. You'll have to pull a chart up later on. But yeah, let's get into your stuff. We'll talk about SpaceX a bit later on, mate.
Absolutely. So, right, where are we? Share screen. Let's have a look, ladies and gents. Here we are. Hopefully, you can all see this. So, first up, we've got a company called XP Power. Now, this is a £500 million listed UK company that develops and manufactures power control components. Now, although I said this isn't an AI play, it does have some AI revenue associated with it because data centers require power components and therefore an element of the strengthening of this business will be related to AI. But power components aren't only used in data centers. That's the important thing to remember. The technology that XP Power produces is used in consumer goods, it's used in manufacturing businesses, it's used in all sorts. So this is a much wider business than simply AI. Now, the reason I wanted to talk about XP Power was because year to date, the shares are actually up 88.9% as of the recording of this podcast. So they're up nearly 90% year to date. And this is off the back of some interim results, some of which came out today. If we have a quick look at these as they come up. The company announced interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of June, and we've had a 55% increase in order intake. That's absolutely phenomenal growth in the order book. Now, this hasn't necessarily translated through to revenue because orders aren't revenue until somebody's purchased them and the cash has actually hit your bank account. But at some point, you would expect that revenue is going to follow the order intake and therefore grow just as strongly. Now, the other thing to watch out for here is actually their operating profit and their gross margin, which you can see down here. Now, they're operating on a gross margin of 45%. This isn't a business that is eking out pennies in every order that they make and working on volume. These are profitable contracts. And their operating profit is growing strongly. In constant currency over the 6 months to the 30th of June was up 23%. Now, the shares have, like I say, approximately doubled during 2026. So this isn't just about looking forward at what the business might do in the future. The market started to recognize that this business is recovering. And the market's already rewarded evidence that orders, margins, and profitability are improving. But to me, this is a business that once it started to get a bit of momentum, I think this has the likelihood of continuing for a period to come. Certainly, the management are quite optimistic about it, and it's not a business I hear a lot of people talking about. Don't know if you've got any thoughts on that one, Peter.
You've happened to pick a stock that I own, Henry,
Oh.
unfortunately. So I purchased this last year at less than £7.50 with a view that its intrinsic value. Put this all on X. People can go and find that on my thread. That it was worth £22 per share because of the niche sort of businesses that they're in, and this sits in the sort of bucket of power and flexibility of power across various different strands and markets and segments. And you've got basically, I put the tweet out about Jensen Yuan from Nvidia saying literally the energy demand for all the stuff related to AI will be a thousand times what we need on what, sorry, what we've got right now. And obviously XP Power is not going to be able to deliver all of that, but it's going to be one of the possibly one of the other companies that could benefit from that demand of power and flexible power and unique sort of types of power to go in and all the connectivity that requires. The interesting thing about what they do as well is regarding programmable power supplies. So it sits in that sort of bottleneck of all the different companies that need to program and sequence how much power goes there when and the durability of that. Yeah. So that's why I got into it, and it sat there, was unloved. And then suddenly with all the AI stuff and all the other stuff that was going on regarding Nvidia and all the other things regarding power and energy, it started to creep up, and it's had a phenomenal run in the last 12 months or so. But today, and it's this goes back to what Wayne Grossman said. You know, it came out the results. I read it this morning and went, those results are good. It's going to pop some more today, and it actually fell. It got
Yeah,
went down to
down
£16.
2% according to
Yeah,
Sharescope.
it went down to 16.40 this morning. I'm sat there going, what have I missed? I've read that, but it's that situation where the results have arrived and people go, yeah, that's what we were expecting, and they sell into the news and the share price then drops. It rebounded a little bit during the day and finished at, what is it, 17 quid or whatever it was. But I was expecting the market to go, thank you very much, and have some more, but it arrived, it delivered what it's meant to have delivered, and people went, yeah, thank you very much, and sold off into it. So we'll see, we'll see. I suspect the markets will reward it in time for its growth and the backlog, revenue backlog that they've got to deliver for going forward, and that'll help with profitability. But yeah, I'm happy with the share price at the minute. I'm hoping by year end, if not beginning of next year, we'll see it at plus 20 quid. So yeah.
I've got a sneaky suspicion as well. This could be another one of your takeovers in time.
I hope not. I hope not.
Because historically, this was a £50 share. And I remember looking at it back in 2020, 2021, and thinking, I'm not entirely convinced by it. As I recall, it seemed a little bit pricey. And it really has had a torrid time. I think they had issues with China, I think they had a litigation case.
Yep.
They had revenue issues, and you can see the shares derating terrifically.
Terrifically, yeah, yep.
Double-digit declines 4 years running, 3 years
Yep.
before this recovery. And so, if this business is starting to recover, and an overseas buyer likes the look of it, they could get it at pennies in the pound for what it was a few years ago.
I'm hoping not, Henry. I'm hoping not. So, 15th of July, XP welcomed a judgment from the United States Courts of Appeal for the Ninth Circuit, which reversed a previous 2022 judgment and remanded the trade secret litigation with Comet Technologies USA for a new trial. So that was in their favor. So now going forward, that's one less thing that they might have to deal with. Obviously, Comet's going to again try to win the new trial, but it was a positive on the date that news was released, and the share price was that's on that day rose to £19.20. So we will see what happens with that later this year and next year. So yeah, so yeah, good news today. Market went meh and the share price wasn't rewarded, but I'm still holding it and I'll keep holding it going forward.
Love it. Love it. And I think this goes to show sometimes you can respond to news and over the long term actually lose out. This court case, for example, as I recall, they were sued by Comet Technologies for IP theft, I think it was, on one of the converters. And the market just panicked. You're going to lose it. You're toast. And admittedly, it's taken them 4 years to come to a conclusion on this. But my understanding is that XP Power has had a fairly consistent position on this. Management has always said, look, we're in the right. We've not actually done anything wrong here. You know, it's up to you as an investor whether you choose to take that or wait for the outcome. But, you know, good news for XP Power, I would say. Good news.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next time. They've got some news. Fingers crossed it does not get taken over. I mean, I know it's only a sub 500 mil company, but we want to keep and retain some good quality companies that are UK listed. It's part of the reason why we're talking about UK listed stocks today, folks. Right, this is one, Henry, which is a completely unloved company. And once again, it's one of them that's, I'm probably pre-COVID was one of the stocks that people liked to buy because it was, things were going well for the general construction market, et cetera, et cetera. But this is not a stock that you see lots of people talking about. This is not a stock which people at events talk about. This is not a stock where the CEO, CFO are on different podcasts and different shows and being interviewed relentlessly. But everyone, I think, has had some dealings with this company if they've had anything to do with builders, merchants, or home improvements. This company, Henry, is Travis Perkins. And I'm not sure we've spoken about this on this podcast before.
This is the
TPK.
builders' merchants, isn't it?
This is correct. Absolutely. Travis Perkins is a British builders, merchants, and home improvements retailer with a head office based in Northampton. Listed on the stock exchange as a FTSE 250 component. And if you've seen any adverts with a man dancing, it's probably Henry, and the company's subsidiary is called Tool Station and has
Tool
Henry
station.
dancing. Yes. And it's got the beautiful thing about this one as well, Henry, is that it's got operations in Europe. But obviously, when things were a bit laggard post-COVID regarding construction, lockdown, all the rest of it, then they had their margins all squeezed. Then the cost of employees went up, et cetera. Everything that could go wrong for Travis Perkins went wrong. However, as Henry and I have discussed before, read the RNSs very, very carefully. Because today, what happened? They basically came out and surprised the market. They've been doing a turnaround on this particular company, the CEO, the CFO, for what seems an absolute age. And the share price has just carried on going drift down, drift down, drift down. Today, the shares for Travis Perkins surged nearly 18% to £6.78 and a half following the release of their H1 2026 interim financial results, which provided clear evidence that the company's turnaround plan is working. The key drivers, let's start with profit growth. The company delivered a 6.3% rise in adjusted operating profit to 67 million, beating expectations. Everyone loves that term, despite navigating a depressed construction market. So the market's depressed, but they're still making profit. That's a really, really good indicator. Turnaround progress and new leadership. Investors were positively responding to the first set of financial results under the new chief executive, Gavin Slark. So new exec's gone in, changed things around a little bit, and already seeing returns on the bottom line. And then you had early signs. The brokers are already talking the shares up today. Panmure Liberum, Peel Hunt, highlighting the encouraging early signs of recovery and operational self-help that they've put in place. And the wonderful thing about it as well is that they've had gross margin expansion, Henry, successfully captured with a £11 million expansion in its gross margin, achieved the self-help again by effectively passing through building material prices, inflation, improving pure procurement terms. I can't even say the word. And obviously improving sales trend. Stronger balance sheet as well, a bit more discipline, and net debt, your favorite Henry, reduced. Yeah. So what happened? A 50, sorry, 18% pop today for a builders merchants, construction led home improvements in an arena where people going, nah, housing market's dead. No one's doing up their houses. Did it. Bosh. Surprised.
It's a really
Thoughts?
interesting set of results, this. I mean, the drop in revenue of 2% compared with the, 6% increase in operating profit. It's, your margins are improving, but to me, this says that the overall business, your market's still deteriorating, your top line revenue's still coming down. You're just doing more with the little, with the smaller piece of the pie that you've got. The strengthening balance sheet, however, is really, really promising because, as we mentioned at the beginning of the episode, with rates going up, debt is costing more. You don't want your businesses to be taking on debt. And it looks to me like Travis Perkins is paying theirs down, which is exactly what you'd want to see in this sort of environment. I suppose for me, the big question, if I own this, would be, is this business actually turning around now, or has it just stopped deteriorating? And that's something I'm not so sure about. I'm sort of 50-50 looking at these results. So I'd want to, if I owned it, I'd be holding. I'm not sure I'd be adding on these. If I didn't hold it, which I don't hold it, I'm not sure I'd be buying off the back of these results. Someone clearly has. But I'd want to see another half year update of positive momentum and seeing this continuing. And I'd want to see that sliding revenue, growing again.
Yeah, that's a good call, Henry. But put the chart up for me, please. If you put up a chart for the share price and look over the long term, 5 years, maybe 3 years, and you can see where it's been, Henry. Yeah. So you're looking all the way back. Is that pre-COVID? Yeah, pre-COVID days. You're looking at
£18 a share.
18, nine, nearly £19 a share, all the way down to potentially four, maybe.
Yeah,
Yep,
that's just no,
five.
actually, yeah. Geez, five
Five.
a share.
So
Yeah.
it's been hammered for 5 years, and they've been waiting, or we're turning it around. They've been turning it around for 5 years. This is the first time they've surprised them. Well, not the first time, but they surprised the market enough. I'm not sure if there's any more shorters expecting more bad news, but if there were, some of them got absolutely burnt to a crisp today. So we've got an 18% move. Now you're saying I want to see the next set of results, the next trading update. If that is positive, it could equally be up another plus 5, plus 10, plus 15%. And if the market's conditions around them improve, then the share price will carry on its momentum. And all of a sudden, you've got the shares at £7, £8 a share. The good news comes out, goes up 10%, and it's 11 quid.
Yeah,
So it's gone from 5 to 11 in a
I
heartbeat
agree
because
with
it's
you.
been, yeah,
You
because it's
know,
been
I mean,
neglected.
I think the other
Horrible
thing
chart.
that concerns me a little bit is this return on capital figure down here.
It's
You
paper
know,
thin, mate.
it is absolutely paper thin. And this is the problem with builders merchants. You know, you've got very little competitive edge. I mean, you've got a retail estate, so you mentioned that they own Toolstation. But there's Homebase, there's B&Q, there's Quick Fix, there's all
Very
sorts out
competitive
there,
space. Yeah.
and it doesn't take a lot for that margin to get eaten away. Again, if I was looking at investing in this, I'd want to be talking to management, or I'd want to understand what Travis Perkins needs to do to get that figure growing properly. Because to me, a cash return of 6.7%, it's not really good enough. It doesn't meet my hurdle rate of 10% I try to hit on investments. So I'd want to understand the figures better, and I'd want to understand what their plan is for maybe simplifying the estate, maybe stripping out some costs and focusing on the more profitable bits of the business.
Spot on. And I suspect that's what the new CEO is going to be doing to make it far more efficient and therefore be able to scale it as a more efficient, lean, mean machine going forward. And I wish him luck. I don't own the shares. I just thought today's news and seeing that from a
It's a hell
low
of a pop.
of it's a massive pop, mate. Sub 5 quid and then popping today to nearer to what? Nearer to 7 quid. So congratulations to anyone that's had a nibble at that. If you have had a nibble at it, please do let us know. Right, Henry, over to you, sir.
Right. Well, on the theme of UK sort of non-AI businesses, we've got Trustpilot,
Right, okay.
TRST. And what got me thinking about this was actually the Leopold Aschenbrenner situation, because this is exactly the sort of business that he would have shorted. It's software-led. It's an online website for independent reviews of products. So I think most of our listeners have probably heard about this. You can go online, you can go on Trustpilot, you can leave a review for something that you've purchased. And they then provide that feedback to businesses in order to help them to build trust, grow and improve their products and their services, but also to help their customers to validate what they want to buy and when they want to buy it. So it's a little bit like if you're an older member of the audience, you might remember Which magazine, the consumer focused brand. It's that sort of area.
I remember which accent, Henry.
Excellent. Now, the interesting thing about Trustpilot, it's one of these businesses that's actually got huge market network effects. It's got over 360 million reviews on the platform, and over 64 million monthly active users. So this isn't some niche little review website. This is one of the most trusted brands in the market.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
And last month, they gave a market update, which, if we can wait for the system to load, 16th of July. When I went back and had a look, it was actually pretty strong. Now, first half bookings were up 22%, and annual recurring revenue was up 15% to 313 million. Now, this is showing clear growth in a business that's supposed to be getting crucified by AI. And a little bit like the London Stock Exchange, a little bit like RELX and Experian. Actually, the results that these businesses are publishing aren't showing that they're falling apart and getting eaten alive by AI. If anything, they're showing completely the opposite. These are healthy businesses that continue to be healthy and continue to do well. And growth has been particularly strong in the US, which really surprised me because the US is supposed to be this hotbed of AI. Everybody over there is supposed to be technologically advanced and all over AI. And actually, here they are using our little old Trustpilot. Now, their forecasts also were pretty positive. So they reckon they're on track to deliver full year guidance of high teens revenue growth and adjusted EBITDA margin of 2 to 3%. So management's not saying, look, we had a fluke 6 months. The next 6 months are going to be terrible. They're saying, actually, we've got positive momentum. It's going to continue for the second half of the year. So I think that this is a business that's been unfairly discounted, or was unfairly discounted, certainly. It dropped off nearly 50% last year. And actually, it's starting to recover really nicely. It's up 70% year to date. So I think it's a platform that's going to continue to do well. And I think that people are recognizing the quality of that business, with a 200% free cash flow conversion and 116% cash return, which is, phenomenal figures when you consider that a business like Travis Perkins is generating 6%.
Yeah, it's a capital light business, isn't it? Again, tech related. So yeah, margins are absolutely
Phenomenal.
huge. We got yeah. It's had a few dark moments though. You can see those dips there, Henry, where it's had bad years. There was a time when it was being investigated for mafia style practices. It's had a few fines in different countries. So there's always somebody trying to knock it. But the fact it's sitting still and able to maintain a market cap of 1.1 billion means that it's got something of substance there, and it's being used in several countries. Can you put the breakdown as to where the revenues are coming from, please, Henry? So
I
where is it coming
can.
from?
Yeah,
So yeah,
40%
UK's
is
making four.
UK.
Yeah. So I was thinking that. So Europe, rest of the world, and North America makes up 60%. Yeah, 60% of its revenue. So that's a business that's absolutely scaled from what it was as a UK business. So that's done well, and it's another one of those companies which, because it's a UK company, doesn't really get talked about in the press that much. We see the adverts, we know it's there. It doesn't get a lot of love in the papers. They don't see it talked about that much by market commentators. And in fairness, it's one of those companies I personally have always looked at and gone, not sure about it. I don't want to use the pun, but I'm not sure I trust it enough to buy it. I trust it enough to use it, but I don't want to buy shares in the company, which is a bit unfair. So I'm glad they're doing well. It's one of them companies which I would like to see remain independent as well, because you know what, like all things, if it's working, somebody else wants it, doesn't it? And the database that they've got is probably going to be significant regarding all the clients that they've got and the companies that they're actually working with. So yeah, no, that's a good shout, that one, Henry. It's done, is that year to date? It's done 70% already.
70%. Yeah,
Oh my
70%.
gosh.
And actually, if you'd
That's
bought it right down here, so if we pull the chart up again and go
wow.
to the, where are we? 1 year chart. If you'd bought down here, you'd have got an even better
Wow.
return. So it was down at
Wow.
131 and it's now up at 280.
I've completely missed that, mate. In the last 6 months, it's just flown. Well, year to date, it's just flown, hasn't it?
I mean,
That's phenomenal.
back in February, March time, there was a massive anti-AI sell-off. It
Right.
was it just devastated the market. Anything that was tech related, anything that was knowledge based, anything that was capital light, the assumption was AI is coming for your dinner. And all of a sudden, people have started looking at these AI companies and going, well, actually, these things are burning cash. They're not economically viable. Not all of them are going to survive. I think AI is here to stay, but not all of the businesses that are listed on the exchange or that you can buy as a private entity are going to be here in 10 years, in the same way that businesses like Yahoo and Ask Jeeves have sort of fallen by the wayside in the early days of the internet.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think the other thing that you wanted to touch on is the fact that, if it's a UK company, we as UK investors go, yeah, it's all right, but it's not going to give me 100% return, is it? But then go across to the UK and it's generating less revenue, it's got more debt, it's less profitable, but it's moving at a rate of knots, and it's up 10%, down 10%, but over the course of a year, it's up 30%. There is more and more individuals going towards that sort of mentality of buying the racier US stocks. So Trustpilot, ups 70% year to date, does it without anyone talking about it. No one beating the drum regarding that particular stock, is there?
No.
Not that I've seen.
No.
So yeah, very, very good call, that one, Henry. Well spotted, that one. Right, we need to take a little break here, Henry. I want to share this story with you because we spoke about this stock relentlessly over the past couple of months, even with our guests on there. And it's a very, very short and sweet comment about this one. And then I'll talk about the Investor Summit. But I'm talking about this because the headline caught me, and I thought it was a bit unfair to be fair. And this was the Telegraph today. And the headline was, "Some days I feel like an idiot. The SpaceX gamble gripping investors. Backers overlook the risk to own a slice of Elon Musk's space empire." And it starts with, "It is all such a lottery," admits Richard Cook as he reflects on his recent £3,000 SpaceX investment. Cook, a 51-year-old business development specialist, received less than half of the £7,000 worth of shares he applied for in SpaceX in June's initial IPO. Interest in Elon Musk's rocket company was rife amongst retail investors ahead of its heavily oversubscribed IPO, in which 120,000 UK adults participated in one of the most widely anticipated stock market floats in recent history. According to Marex, the broker behind the IPO, UK retail investors, poured just under $1 billion, $750 million, into SpaceX, during the book building process, equating to an average outlay of 5,800 per investor. Yeah. And the scramble, Henry, what did it do? It caused the shares to pop. Yeah. And then what happened after it was allocated?
It caused them to crash.
Caused it to crash. And now
I
we've
mean,
got a
I.
situation where, sorry, go on.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny you mentioned that article because I saw exactly the same headline on my Twitter feed not an hour ago. I went and looked at this article, and my first thought was, first of all, really, you ought to be thanking your lucky stars you only got 3,500, not £7,000 worth of this, because your 3,500 is now worth probably 1,500. If you'd had 7,000, it'd be now worth 3,500. So arguably getting a lower slice, a smaller slice of the initial allocation probably saved you capital. But I also wonder that the thing that really piqued my interest was what on earth this guy thought he was buying. Because you and I have talked about SpaceX to some extent. You know, I'm a massive skeptic of this. I'm a massive skeptic of Tesla as well. I think Tesla is an absolute dog's dinner of a share. And I think SpaceX is exactly the same. This business just incinerates cash. Their first quarter results, they generated 4.7 billion of revenue, but reported an operating loss. They've actually, in their IPO prospectus, they listed landing on Mars and having people living on Mars as a potential asset to the business. This is, it's not even pie in the sky, it's pie in space. It's just absolutely bonkers. And so, what I'd really like to do is to be able to sit down with this guy that's been interviewed by the Telegraph and go, what did you think you were doing? What was your thesis on this? Because to me, this screams stay away all day long.
It's a tough one, Henry. This is what Wayne talked about, the storytelling, the building of the narrative regarding it all. You've got every single man and the dog around the world all wanting to buy this because it's Elon Musk and because of the story he's telling and the marketeers that are all marketing this particular company. So it lists at 135. It rockets over the next few days, 50% to 225. But the larger investors and institutions are locked in. They can't sell. The ones that can sell are selling into that. Yeah. The 50% and so on and so forth. You've now got tonight we're recording, right, on the 4th. They've got the second quarter results that come out. Yeah. If that's good, the shares will probably pop, right? However, you're now at the stage now where the 4th of August, if I've got this right, marks the first opportunity for 20% of locked up shares owned by SpaceX staff and pre-IPO investors. They can now sell after tonight or today or whatever which way around it is, right? And then you've got the additional tranches going further forward. Yeah, additional tranche of 7% will be then be eligible to be unlocked and sold at intervals of 70, 90, 105, 120, and 135 days after the flotation. So you've got tranche, 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 tranche of opportunity to exit. Yeah. So it's going to be a volatile one, but people are buying in or bought into the IPO on the long-term expectation that this is going to be a 5 billion, 20 billion, whatever valuation going forward. And I was scratching my head going, I'm not participating in this. I'm going to stay well away.
I was appalled to hear. I was listening to Merin Somerset Webb and John Stepak a couple of months ago, and Merin came out with, "Oh, I went and got some. I've gone and bought SpaceX." And I thought, I'm going to sound like a horrendous snob here, but what are you doing? What are you doing? You are a highly respected financial commentator. I've got a lot of time for Mary and a lot of time for John, and they're a lot smarter than I am or probably ever will be. But I do have to ask myself, when you're on a Bloomberg platform going, "Oh, well, I went and got some and we'll just see what happens with it," was basically her comment. To me, it's not, that's not investing. And you know, we had Wayne on here 2 weeks ago, and Wayne said, I'm not an investor, I'm a trader. It's all short term. It's all, what can I buy this for and sell it for tomorrow? That's the way I operate. Fine, if that's what you're doing, that's what you're doing. But you and I are about investing. And to me, you know, it's fine saying in 20 years this might be worth 20 billion, but what's your basis for that? Because right now it's loss making. So the bigger this thing gets, what's the catalyst for it turning around and becoming profitable? Because the more stuff it does, the more money it burns.
Mate, you are going to get the next story of this. The next leg of this narrative is merging it with Tesla, yeah, or merging it with something else. But it'd probably be Tesla in the next 12 months, within the next 12 months, and then hiding how badly or how well, or mainly how badly Tesla's doing versus the other, electric cars and so on and so forth. And then it'll be, once that story's been bedded in, it'll be a case of buying other bits and pieces to shore up what the revenue's going in underneath all of that to make the valuation seem sensible. But he wanted to be the first trillionaire on
He did it
paper.
for a
He achieved
week.
that. He achieved that. And at some point or other, he'll be a trillionaire again, no doubt. But it's one of those folks, the fear of missing out can grip everybody, no matter how smart you are. No matter where you are in the echelons of the financial markets, people will get caught up in FOMO. Yeah, and the hardest thing to do is to walk alone and go, I'm going to do something different to what the crowd is doing.
I think
Yeah.
the I mean, there's two things I'd say on this. Actually, I'm watching this ticker. The US market's actually live. The shares are up 8% at the moment. So I'm guessing the latest news update was
It's
fairly positive. It's been
positive.
well received.
Yeah,
So who
yeah,
knows?
yeah.
Maybe this will skyrocket from here. But on the fear of missing out thing, again, you've got to ask yourself, what do you think you're missing out on? Because buying a company at $200. You know, if you were buying it at $200, are you loading up at 110? Are you loading up at 123? Or are you not touching it? What are
That's
you buying?
a great call, Envy. And this is the thing I find with a lot of people. I've had a few opportunities with some good news and some bad news recently. And some news came out for Aberdeen, and it arrived, and the news was reasonably good. Share price went wallop. And I was sat there going, oh my gosh, again. But I thought, no, you know what? Sod it. I'm buying it because I know what's going on regarding this company. And since then, the share price has gone from 225. I think the intraday lows were, and it was at 250 at some stage today. And I'm going, no, I'm buying that because I know intrinsically what this company is worth. But good news, it will not be rewarded unless the market sentiment is one of, we like that story. Yeah. Travis Perkins, they like the turnaround story, popped 18%. Even reading that news, as you saw it, this RNS this morning, that was that 18% worthy today? But no, the market liked it, so it went up 18%.
But I think it's
There's no
also
reason.
about the volume of shares that are traded.
Absolutely,
So
absolutely. But there's
effectively, your market price is the last price someone was willing to exchange a share at. That's all that price actually reflects, the very last price that anybody in the world was willing to you know, sell a share at. That doesn't mean that that's
Absolutely.
what the business is worth.
Absolutely spot on.
And you know, I look at articles like that one in the Telegraph, and I'm not a financial advisor, and I'm not some guru that's going to be telling you what to buy and what to sell. If you want to go buy SpaceX, fine, go buy SpaceX. Prove me wrong in 10 years' time. Prove me wrong later this year, for all I know. But to me, you should be thinking about what is your thesis for owning this? What is your thesis around owning companies? You're not buying names on a screen and hoping you can sell them to someone else for more tomorrow. That's the wrong way of looking at it. If you're doing that, go down to the casino, put it all on red, and keep doing that until you've doubled your money and see how that ends, because that's effectively what you're doing. You know, investing is about understanding the operating business, it's about understanding the economy. You know, as our friend Charlie Huggins has pointed out on numerous occasions, is about understanding the cash flows that the business will generate. That's what you're buying, access to future cash flows. If the business generates no cash, what's the thing actually worth?
Absolutely spot on. And we're going to talk about a solid company a bit later on, Henry. A bank, and I know you like your banks, mate. So we're going to talk about a bank in a minute. Solid business. But first, Henry, I need you to draw up, please, the Investor Summit website. So, folks, what's happened with this, as you all will know, hopefully know by now, is I'm one of the co-founders of this fantastic event, which is running for its now second year. We've managed to secure the Right Honourable Shadow Chancellor, Mel Stride. We've got Jeff Prestridge, who's going to be emceeing on the main stage. We've got Simon French. We've got Wealth Club. We've got Edison Research people, London South East people, Equiniti. We've got all the platforms as well, Interactive Investor there, RBS Lansdowne's there, and so on and so forth, Henry. You've got the conversations and the schedule there in front of you. You can see what's going on. Can you put up the speakers for me, Henry? We'll just run through some of them names. So that number is now 61 different individual speakers. Two of those you can dismiss, which are myself and Henry, but we'll be doing our little chat and live podcast. But you can see, for those of you on YouTube, you can see now. Let me just scroll back up to the top for me, please, Henry, so I can start again. Thank you. So you've got Jeff Prestridge mentioned already, Nick Dilworth at Retail Book, Gerard Ashley at Sir Morgan and Co., Tom Bailey, Han ETF, Stephen Banford, Equiniti, Edinburgh Investment Trust, Emily Barnard, George Barrow, Polar Capital, Sam Bell, the other co-founder of Investor Summit. We've got Kerry Barry Trow of MUFG, SP Angel. You've got Charles Moverance. You've got Ellen Boyd of the FCA, Nick Britton, Association Investment Companies, Annabelle Brody Smith from the AIC as well, Lucy Castledean from FCA. You've got Murray International Trust person there, Martin Conaghan. You've got George Cooper, one of the main headline sponsors of Equitable Investment there, a previous guest on the show, by the way, so you might want to come and see him for definite if you liked him on the pod. You've got Micah Curry of Pension B, they're one of the headline sponsors as well. You've got Pippa Dale from London Stock Exchange and now also an angel investor. You've got James Deal from Retail Book, Kamala Esmond of Interactive Investor, Jack Featherby from JP Morgan, portfolio manager of the JP Morgan European Discovery Trust, Laura Fole, who went down brilliantly last year with all the attendees of Lord Debenture, Simon French mentioned him already of Panmure Liberum, Jelly Fulton from Emperor. You've got SEC, Newgate, I could go on, Peel Hunt, and more names. But you need to go and find that list and go through it. I've got to mention Ben Rogoff of Polar Cap because they've got the highest performing tech fund, or had the highest performing tech fund year this year, and have also won a major award for performance this year as well. But yeah, find the list, have a look at it, see what you like. We're covering ETFs, we're covering funds, we're covering investment trusts and some stocks as well. And the beautiful thing about it is that I've negotiated a discount for all of our listeners. So just using Twin Peaks, one word, into the second page of the tickets page will give a reduction of £15 off the price of your ticket. So go and have a visit, try the name in the box, and see what the price of your ticket will be. And we look forward to seeing you on the 18th of September. And don't forget to put a little tick next to you're coming to see Henry and I do a live podcast, which will be a portfolio analysis. So what we're going to ask everyone to do is just come sit in the crowd. We're not going to know anything about what you want to talk about. And we're just going to ask you to say, Henry, please, can you have a look at, yeah, Ixico, please, can you have a look at whatever? As long as it's a UK listed stocks, not like we did at Master Investor Show where some individual decided he'd try and, get us to make a mockery of what we're trying to do by asking for a random US stock. So please, yeah, please come along. Oh, you're going through your pictures, Henry, are you?
I
Of
was
you
going to
being at the
say, God,
show
that's a
last year.
terrible one.
For those of you on YouTube, Henry's now gone to the pictures of last year that he's scrolling through, which was an absolutely fantastic event. But he paused when he recognized himself.
Well, the I mean, I've got to say, I thoroughly enjoyed last year, Peter. It was a great day, and it was lovely to see so many of the audience there as well. Unfortunately, this year, I'm double booked, would you believe? So I am coming to the Investor Summit. I will be there with you on stage, and I will be there for most of the day. But unfortunately, I've then got to skedaddle off to Bournemouth at some point later in the day. Because I'm expected down there in the evening. So
Lovely.
if you
Okay.
do
So
want to
that
grab
means
me,
there's
I
more alcohol
recommend
for everybody
lassoing
else. So
me.
you're not going to consume what you did last year. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I was very well behaved last year, mostly, sort of.
Wonderful.
But yeah, if you've not got your tickets already, ladies and gents, the website is investorsummit.co.uk. You click this little button up here, buy tickets. And the code is Twin Peaks,
Yep.
all one
Yep.
word.
Yeah, so you put your little number of tickets you want in there, go to the second page, and you enter the code.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer. The UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code Twin Peaks. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
So go and get your tickets now.
Yeah, and if I'm wrong, try it with two words, as in twin and Pete's, and see what happens. Okay,
Oh. Don't say
the
that.
ones will
You'll cause
work.
absolute bedlam now. We'll be inundated with people going, oh, the code didn't work.
Right, so try one of the other folks. Right, okie-doke, Henry, let us move on, and we look forward to seeing you at the show on the 18th of September. Right, so I promised you a banking group, Henry, which is the
Yes.
one most synonymous with the UK. Now, anyway, depending on all what's happened over the last 20 years, it is Lloyds Banking Group, Henry. Yeah, and I'm sharing this because I was quite shocked by something I saw. I saw something. I thought, that's very interesting, and it was the fact it was sitting at a 52-year high,
52
52
week.
year, sorry, 52-week high. Let me get me. It's been too hot, folks. 52-week high. Then I dug a little bit further and I looked at the charts. I'm looking at it. I'm going, wow. If you take out all the share splits and the capitalizations, the share price closed today at its highest point since late September 2008.
Wow.
Yeah. So 80, almost nearly coming up to 18 years high share price. This is a company that nobody wanted. What year is that, Henry? 2000, is that the final,
That only takes me back to 2016. I can't go
You'd have to
further
type,
back.
you type into custom and then do 20 years.
Let's have a look at that. Oh, wow. I
Look at
didn't know you
that.
could
Look
do
at
that.
that.
Oh, my
Right?
Lord. God, I'm glad I wasn't
See,
buying it up here.
exactly. But lots of people were, mate. It got absolutely smashed. Yeah.
Yeah, this was the financial crash, wasn't it? Beginning of
That was one of
07.
them. Yeah. 2007, 06, 07,
Good
one up
Lord. So it went
from
from
£3. I think it went down to 20 odd pence, something like that.
16 pence, this is.
Yeah. So
Yeah, 16 pence.
got absolutely smashed. And anyone that was buying it at those lows and then had another opportunity to buy it in 2011, 2012 at those lows again have made hay. But even back,
Wow.
going back to COVID lows again, Henry. So three times it's bounced off those sort of levels. Yeah. And people have capitalized on it. So you're on to what essentially is almost a five bagger slash six bagger. If you picked it up at COVID lows when nobody wanted to have anything to do with banks because no one was transacting or moving house, were they? So,
No.
and using up their savings and spending like I don't know what because they were like, yeah, I'm at home. I'm going to build a new shed in the garden. I'm going to have this extension done and so on and so forth. But it's done absolutely well. So, the reason I'm talking about it, Henry, is because the shares, despite all the stuff that's going on, and you talked about higher interest rates, they're up 18% year to date quietly. Yeah. And over the past 1 year, I think they're up, is it 41% in total? But you can see last year they're up 79% in 2025, Henry, in total. Yeah. So they've not done a lot in the past July to the July, but they're now at an 18-year high almost. What's behind this, folks, right? I've got a few numbers here, right? Robust H1 2026 earnings and revenue beat. So once again, we're talking about what Henry and I were talking about beating ahead of expectations. They delivered a strong first half financial performance with statutory pre-tax profits jumping 23% year on year to 4.3 billion, comfortably beating consensus and that analyst estimates of £4 and 12 pence, 4.12 billion, sorry. Total revenue was up 5.6%, again, a beat against market expectations at 7.18 billion. And because of the high interest rates, as Henry has said, that's a tailwind for the banks. Yeah. So that's what's done them well. But other than that, mate, they're looking at capital returns and the market loves it. Yeah. So brand new £1 billion share back, hiked its interim dividends by, listen to this, Henry, 30%.
Wow.
So that's going to interest a
Wow.
few people. Yeah. And the launch of Accelerate 2030 strategy was initiated as well. So the shares are being transformed. And what are they using, Henry, as well to help them transforming stuff? AI.
Oh, don't say it.
Within the banking system, within making things more efficient and tidying things up and dealing with things a little bit quicker than they used to do before. But I wanted to mention that very, very quickly because when people think of a stock that's doing well, they don't already look at banks and think, I'm going to go there and buy that because you're looking elsewhere. I'm not saying it's a racy performance. I'm saying it's an outperformance for what it does. Can that continue in a high interest rate environment? Possibly. Can it continue when most people are not buying as many houses anymore? I don't know. But people need to save, people need to invest, and Lloyds Banking Group have got their fingers in lots of different pies regarding that, including insurance. Thoughts, Henry?
Well, this is one that sticks in my craw because I remember talking to you about this years and
Okay.
years and years ago when I still lived on the other side of London because I used to own Lloyds. And I said, I'm
Right.
not wildly enthusiastic about it. I think it was one of my top 10 at the time. It's gone absolutely nowhere. I've owned it for years. I'm not enthusiastic. And a friend of mine, Faisal, has bought and bought and bought and bought and bought, and he's got a huge position in Lloyds. And every time he mentions it, I go, "You're mad. You know, what are you doing?" And he said to me, every time there was a dip, I'm loading up on buying more. So, geez, how much Lloyds do you
Wow.
need? But in the long run, he's been proved right, and I didn't have the patience for it. It's a rare example of one of those where I just lost patience with it. The thing that's caused the re-rating, like you say, it's interest rates starting to go up. And I gave up on them going up years ago, you know, well before 2021. And I never came back. And if I had, you know, if I'd been buying at the bottom at 25 pence or whatever it was,
Yep.
you
Scaling
know,
and scaling and scaling and
oh, the returns would have
it
been
takes, but
phenomenal.
this takes pay. This is what people forget. A lot of people forget and they think investing is easy. See the chart on Lloyds and go, wow. But could you have sat through 5 years of it going
It
absolutely
was. It
nowhere?
would have been longer than that for me. I mean, I
Yeah.
originally bought Lloyds. God, it would have been somewhere, probably around here, 2016, 50-ish
Right, okay.
pence. And so it kind of drifted up to 70, and then it drifted back down to the 50s, and then it drifted back up to the 70, and then it drifted back down to the 50,
And then
and then
COVID happened.
it dropped off a cliff, and it came down to 34 pence. And it came all the
Yeah.
way down to 24 pence. And at this point, my friend Faisal was going, "My God, load up, load up." And I can't remember whether I averaged down or not. I'd like to say I did to sound smart, but I genuinely can't recall. But I would have sold out somewhere around here, I think, the 40, 45 pence mark. And I'd have had to sit there for another, what's this, 3 years, 4 years
3 years or
before
so,
anything
mate. Yeah,
happens.
before it takes off. Before interest rates started to improve and
Yeah.
increase. And what do we know? Interest rates go up, banks make more money.
Yeah. And
Margins
if
go
you were
up.
buying up here in 2014 at 90 pence, it's been, gosh, 11
You've been
years
on,
for you to make
yeah,
your
you've been
money back.
underwater. You've been underwater since 2009, mate.
That is some serious patience. And again, this
And if
comes
you look
back to
at it,
this idea about valuations, because it's the same
absolutely.
business whether you buy it at 90 pence or whether you buy it at 25 pence.
Absolutely. But it's the patience bit. And even though you're looking at and you think, right, you know what? Between 2009 and 2025, if you'd compounded the dividends and the share price for a total return basis, I think you'll still be underwater.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's hard. It's a lot harder than people think investing long term, which is why more and more people are churning and trading and doing leverage bets on various different things. It's hard to remain patient on the stock, and looking at it on your screen as a red, another red, another red, and it's constantly red. You think I need to just leave now.
I think the other thing that I'm very cognizant of with Lloyds, we very briefly flashed up the half year results here. And just to give you, ladies and gents, an idea, I'm not going to go through this line by line, because if you can see on the screen, it is just page after page after page
Oh yeah.
of dents,
Nobody wants to read all of
numbers
that
and
stuff.
figures and adjustments and segments, different categories, transfers between the businesses in the group, taxes. I mean, to get your head around this, you need a good head for numbers. And I wrote an article on my blog years and years ago about financials and the difficulty with financials. And most people, I think, invest in financials don't actually understand what they're investing in. They think they do, but they actually haven't really got a clue. And there's a few things for me with Lloyds that I'd want to go and find out if I was going to go and buy this. I mean, number one, impairments. So this is where, Lloyds is in the business of lending money. It lends money to people through mortgages, through credit cards, etc. Impairments are when that money doesn't come back. What's going on with impairments? Are they going up? Are they going down? Are they expected to go up? How will that affect the balance sheet? Because this is what crashed the banks in 2007. Everybody said the impairments were fine, and then all of a sudden they were through the roof because of the subprime mortgage debt that they'd got on the balance sheet. The other thing that catches my eye, and I remember this being a particular problem when I owned the shares, the net interest margin was paltry back here. It was 2%. You're making a 2% margin on your loan. So you're borrowing money at, say, 3%, and you're lending it out at 5%. And they didn't seem to be able to do anything to get that growing. And it spiked towards COVID, and then it fell straight back down again. You're back down at 2.5%. Now, as interest rates have gone up, it's skyrocketed. Their net interest margin's currently showing at nearly 16%. But again, I'd want to know what they've done to generate that growth in the margin, and how sustainable is that really? Because if that reverts back to 2.5%, those shares are going to absolutely crash. So for me, it's about getting into the numbers with Lloyds. And this is where somebody like Ben Rogoff at Polar Capital, I'd want to go and ask him when I'm at the investor summit, if I was looking at Lloyds, you know what, mate, you can't make a recommendation, but why don't we have a beer and you tell me what you think in a broad sense about Lloyds compared to other banks in the sector, and what are you looking at and what issues should I be thinking about? Because they're complicated businesses. So, buyer beware.
They are complicated, mate, but I think we end up looking at about six different metrics on what's going on, and that's mainly its return on revenue, how much it's generated profitability wise. You talked about impairments, the debt, which used to be huge on Lloyds. Those sort of we looked at the core components of it normally, so that And was it coming part one, part two, part three? It just goes on and on and on and on. But none of us can spend all the time to read every single bit of that. And like you say, you need a Harvard, whatever, master's in financial accounting to actually get through all of it. So yeah, it's probably best to leave someone else to do the yards on it. But what is that you've got there, Henry? You've got 5 out of 6 years that the share price has gone up.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's fantastic. If you were buying back here in 2021,
since interest rates started to go up, it's had a nice journey. So yeah, so don't
congratulations.
ever neglect banks in a high interest rate environment, folks. That's another tip from the school of Henry
Hard
Viola
knocks.
Hare and Peter Higgins on the Twin Peaks. Right. Okay. You've quickly got one more stock, Henry, and I've quickly got one more as well. Do you want to give me or us your very quick synopsis of the last one that you've got,
Yeah,
please?
my final one. I actually gave you the wrong name earlier. I said Smith and Nephew. It's not. It's Hill and Smith. The ticker's
Hill and Smith.
HILS, and this is an
Right.
industrials business that caught my eye.
Okay.
The company is basically involved in infrastructure and transportation. They operate around the world. 60% of the revenue comes from the US. With the remainder being, the UK and the rest of the world. It's mostly the UK and the US.
I didn't know that.
But it's absolutely
Wow.
gone gangbusters the last 2 years. I mean, you're up 15% last year and 36%, nearly 37% year to date.
Wow.
Now, although we're talking about shares that aren't focused on the AI space, again, I suspect this has had a little bit of a boost from the growth in AI revenue because of infrastructure spend growing.
And data centers, Henry, and data
Data
centers
centers, exactly.
building.
Now, where are we? There was it their AGM statement I was looking at? No, it was the full year results earlier this year. So revenue was up 4%, with operating profit up 8%. So actually their margins are expanding. This is what caught my eye.
Right, okay.
But to me, it's not just a British construction business. I've talked about British construction businesses before and construction contractors generally, and I'm always a little wary because as a contracting business, you have to price in advance of finishing a contract. And then you can spend years delivering the contract, and materials can go up, labor costs can go up, energy costs can go up. If you're on a fixed contract, that just eats into your margin. And so contractors, with fair regularity, come out with these profit warnings where they suddenly say, well, we were expected to make $1 billion in profit. Actually, we mispriced the last 2 years' worth of contracts, and now we're going to lose $1 billion. And the share price falls off a cliff. So I've always been a little bit wary of them from that regard. But I like the fact that this is a multinational. There's something about it
Yeah.
that appeals to me in the sense that it's predicated on multiple different geographies for its revenue. So if construction in one country slows down or margins contract in one country, actually it's got a broad geographic base to protect its margins elsewhere. And this is the downfall with a lot of UK listed contractors. They're just tied to the UK. And so they've got one
Yeah.
market to operate in. And if that market starts to tighten up, they have problems.
Yeah,
Now,
yeah.
the shares are currently valued at they're a fraction over £29, which, it's not far off their all-time highs. They topped just about £30 a few weeks ago. So they're looking fairly valued to me. But I wonder whether their return on capital is nearly 20% and it's growing. They're expanding their margins, like I say, and they have been for the last couple of years. I wonder whether that quality might attract outside interest, an outside buyer, and might cause a sustainable re-rating of the shares. Not necessarily just from a takeover, but from somebody internationally going, hey, look, actually, this is a higher quality business than some of the domestically focused construction firms.
That's a really, really good call, really good analysis, Henry. I suspect you could be right because there's not many people looking deep enough to see 60 odd percent of their revenues coming from the US. And which is the bigger market, the UK or the US? the bigger market to expand across all those states is the US. Yeah, so the opportunity for growth for Hill and Smith is significant going forward. And we all know that the revenue spend is going to be greater over there. So yeah, I hope not. I hope no one comes to have a nibble at it, and it remains independent. But at 2.3 billion, that's a sizable company. Geographical spread, like you say. Who are the individuals in there at the minute?
Well,
Is there a name
the
to
other thing
recognize
that
as
caught my eye
activist?
with this was just what's been going on with institutional buyers. So this screen on ShareScope shows you what the major shareholders are doing with their block of shares. There's a company called FIL Limited, who I've not heard of before, but there's JP Morgan Asset Management, the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer, and the Chairman, all buying. And recently, significant chunks. So FIL Limited actually took a 5.6% stake back on the 27th of July to become the
Henry?
largest shareholder, beating BlackRock at 5.1%.
Phil Limited, FIL, is the
Yep.
parent holding company for Fidelity International.
Ah, gotcha.
So that's a big entity saying we like what we see.
Yeah. And you've
Yeah,
also
so
got
having
JP Morgan doing the same. I mean, they've opened a position by the look of it as well, 3.9 million on the 17th of June.
That to me sometimes when you see two large entities like that, they're often buying a stake for themselves and for their clients. You know, and if their clients in party are looking, let's think about it. Let's just creep and buy X amount. I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's no one coming for Hill and Smith, but
Makes you wonder.
it makes you wonder. Let's hope the Yanks are not coming for Hill and Smith. Great analysis, Henry. Great call. Great company. Great pick. Long may it stay independent. Established some time ago. So yeah, it's a good, sturdy company that we have in the UK regarding that. Right, I'm going to do a very, very quick one. We've talked about this stock several times since Henry's been on the pod, and he's now been on the pod over 3 years. So thank you, Henry,
My
for
pleasure.
services rendered. Brilliant co-host that you have been and continue to be. Got to mention this. I'm not going to mention the name just yet, Henry. I'm going to throw some metrics at you, right? The metric I'm starting with, Henry, is 5 years compounded annualized return of 68.8% compounded for 5 years. Total return, sorry, not total returns, return, the share price has returned, excluding dividends, 1,262%.
Oh,
Right?
and we've talked about this before.
We've talked about this before. Bear with me, mate. We even talked about this at the Master Investor Show, right? The shares are up. I'm conscious we've running into an hour and 20 minutes already. The shares are up 40% in the past, more than 40% in the past 12 months. Yeah. Strong earnings, guidance hikes, reported excellent half year results recently, featuring Henry. You ready for this? A 46% jump in underlying operating profit to 2.5 billion. It's a UK listing company, not too shabby, one of the best in class that we've got. And the name used to be synonymous with the vehicle. What is it called? Rolls-Royce, my dear friend.
Ah, yes.
Rolls-Royce, folks. I'm not going to go into too much. I'm conscious we've been on here for an hour and a half nearly, if we carry on too much. But as I said, 46% jump in underlying profit to 2.5 billion. That is significant change and jump. Strong delivery. Management materially raised its full year guide. Another raise again. Shares price pop again across major financial metrics, projecting an underlying operating profit for the full year of between 4.7 billion to 4.9 billion. That's a highly profitable company from back in the day when nobody wanted it and they had the tender offer. And everybody went, that's dilution is going to just kill it. We talked about this at the Master Investor Show, and we had our good friend Alan Patterson in the audience going, "Peter, I told you to buy these when they were sub 50p or 70p or sub a pound." And I went, no, Alan, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong." And where are the share price now? 15 quid.
15:30.
Yeah. So
15:30.
Alan's probably, say again, 15.30. So Alan's had it from 50p, 70p a pound, and 15 bagged it and 20 bagged it, etc., etc. But the other reason why it's surging, Henry, is because of the civil aviation turnaround, which is its largest segment. And the civil aviation division benefited from increased, robust increases in large engine flying hours, improved contract economics, and stronger service revenues. And additional to this, the other thing we talked about before, we won't talk about again, but what's been happening? All the geopolitical stuff? Aerospace, Henry. Defense spending is what
Through the
Rolls-Royce is involved
roof.
in. So that's, it's literally gone vertical. It's just like, it's literally taken off. It's on flight, that share price. So yeah, folks. So keep an eye out on that. Am I recommending it now? It's gone up 15-fold since, late 2021, late 2022. No, I'm not. Could it do another 60% this year and next in the next 12 months? Quite possibly, depending on what happens with defense spend and civil aviation. But they're so strong now, given how much money they had to raise back in the day, that they're doing share buybacks and increasing their dividends. And they've restated the dividends, which, when a company stops paying a dividend and then brings it back, that's an amplified sign of strength, folks. So when you read the RNS and it says, "We've now reinstated dividends, get involved," because it's gone from zero to a payment. Whether it's a half year one or a 4 year one, take note. That concludes
Wonderful.
the podcast, I think, Henry.
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, yeah, Henry, you're not the only one that's missed out on Rolls-Royce, mate. I had my chance to buy it at sub 70,
Well,
sub 50, mate.
if I'm allowed another few minutes of indulgence,
You've turned me to make it a 90-minute podcast, aren't you? You turn, yeah,
way,
you
way
get, you
back,
carry on.
this is one of the first names I ever traded. And I say
Are you using
traded, not invested.
Oh gosh.
So when I before I started investing, so I don't think it would be back here in 2013. I think it's probably around here, 2007, 2008, something like that. There was a
Okay.
website called Bull Bearings where you could open up a fictional
Oh.
portfolio, and that was one of the names that I had in my portfolio, and I would trade that with the bouncers. And that was how I started,
Oh.
because I was monitoring shares and I wanted to understand what they did and what the price
Yes.
ranges were. And some
Good way
worked
to
and
learn.
some didn't. But
Yeah.
yeah, before I really started investing with real money, Bull Bearings was where I started.
Good call. Good call. Have you ever invested in Rolls-Royce?
No. No,
Me
and I wish
neither.
I had. I wish
Me
I had.
neither.
I mean, my God,
Yeah.
70 pence. I wouldn't be doing a
Yeah.
podcast. I'd be on a beach somewhere.
I think Alan spends a lot of time in Cornwall just lolling, going like that. Yeah, what a lovely
Yeah.
life.
Yep.
Super smart cookie years as well. Right, Henry, we've maxed it out, mate. We've absolutely smashed it. We've done a good hour and 22 minutes. Oh my gosh. And we had conversations before that saying, we'll both keep it at 60 minutes, won't we? And here we are. Ladies and gents, give a big round of applause and thank yous to Henry, please. Find him at HT Viola on X, and you can find him on LinkedIn, and make sure you go and visit his blog as well, which is Capital Ledger. Yes. And he's recently done a review,
Capitalledger.co.uk.
half year review on his portfolio, which is very, very insightful. Make sure you subscribe to that. Make sure you go and visit the Investor Summit website. And it is one word, Henry. Twin Peaks, capital letters, one word, Twin PETES, to get your discount on your tickets and buy your tickets before they go, and you miss out on what is going to be an absolutely phenomenal, phenomenal day. And don't forget that you have your breakfast, You've got drinks all day. You've got drinks in the evening, all built into your ticket as well. Essentially, you get a day out and you get, as one chap said, an investment show as well on top of it for free. So make sure you get your tickets as soon as possible. And I'll keep you posted as to how we're getting on regarding any further guests, because we're getting inundated with individuals now for the last few panels that we've got going on to populate. Right, ladies and gents, I'm going to wish you a fantastic August going forward. Hopefully have a little bit of rain. Oh, there's one thing I forgot to say, Henry. We have got a chap called Matthew Gray, who has been supporting us, who has got a 1 month subscription to ShareScope for being one of our phenomenal supporters of the podcast. And I've got to mention that. And I will mention another one in the next podcast as well.
Yes, you
Comment?
confused me no end with this because you told Matthew to speak to me about something, and we'd not discussed this. So Matthew called me up and went, "Oh, hi, Henry. Pete says you've got something to tell me." And I
Listen,
went,
I'm the
"What?"
older one. I'm allowed to be senile. It's me just doing too much and juggling too many moving parts. I do things. I've done that. I've done that. It's like checking the door twice. I've gone around the estate and I come back. I've got to drive back to check I've locked the front door. It's getting
This
like
is
that
the
now, isn't it?
pros you are listening to, ladies and gents,
Yeah.
the Twin Peaks.
We're just normal people, folks. We're not professionals. We're just normal folks, just like you. We know better than anybody else. We're just trying our best. We're learning on our feet. Henry, thank you ever so much, sir. Last comments?
My pleasure. Just thank you very much for another great episode. Thank you to everybody that's tuned in. Keep the comments and the likes coming. And if you know somebody that's interested in investing that isn't sure where to start, please do point them in the direction of the podcast. Hopefully they'll learn a thing or two, get some ideas, and avoid the gambling mentality.
Absolutely. If anything's learned from what happened to situational awareness, stay situationally aware and stay away from leverage bets and punts, folks. So take care. Have a great weekend. Henry and I will see you guys, ladies and gents, in 2 weeks' time. Please do visit us. Please do leave your feedback. Please do retweet on X and leave your comments regarding what you liked and didn't like about the pod. And we'll try, as always, to improve on what we've done. So, thank you ever so much. Take care and God bless you all. Bye bye for now.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.